not quite one-fourth, and never just half, but the entirety of one primate, whole. It is the part of a story, an idea that means more to you than me. Hello and welcome to Full Gorilla Life. We are Jeremy Keen,
Larry Medina,
and Corey Hewlings.
Each week, we will break down an important life concept or talk with an inspiring person so that you can live your full gorilla life.
All right, everyone. We'd like to welcome you back to the podcast, the Full Gorilla Life podcast. Today, we welcome Ingrid Hernandez. Did I say that right? Or is it Hernandez?
Oh, you did it right.
All right. All right. Good. Practiced it.
He always does that,
pretending to be Mexican.
Hernandez. That's why I was asked to introduce. Yeah, okay. All right. So Ingrid is a Mary Kay sales director, as well as a TED Talk speaker, if I can talk. TED Talk speaker and speak for Hear My Story. But before we get into all the different things, I feel like we need to add like 10 more things onto this, Ingrid. You know, I mean, most people have like one job. Yeah. And you have like three.
Yeah, that's a good list.
That's a great list. Yeah. Yeah. So before we get into your story, we'll get into the Gorilla Gauntlet and I'll let Corey run through this.
All right. You ready, Ingrid?
I am ready.
Ingrid is pretending like she was nervous before we started, but she's a public speaker. So I feel like, not a big deal
potatoes.
At all.
This is potatoes.
All right, Ingrid, married or single?
Married.
Any children?
Three.
How old are they?
9, 8, and 6.
Okay.
Fun ages.
City you live in?
Vero Beach.
iPhone or Android?
Android.
Wow. Oh, okay. That's a first.
Samsung? Are you Samsung?
Samsung.
Nice. Okay. I feel like most people that are Android go Samsung.
Did you ever go iPhone?
No.
Oh. Okay. Yeah. I even got a look.
Yeah. For those at home, there was a little like, no, I'm just kidding.
Favorite movie or book?
I have a tie for Beetlejuice and Grease.
Okay.
Interesting.
My wife loves Beetlejuice.
I know, two different spectrums.
But let's get into that for a second.
I feel like Beetlejuice is such a random movie and my wife loves it too.
It's a good movie though. It's been a long time since I've seen. Now, have you seen the Broadway play?
I have not.
Is that on your to do? It's got to be.
I didn't know there was a Broadway of Beetlejuice either.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
And how do you know there's a Broadway play?
I travel. Yeah. I don't know.
That's fair.
You've been to one Broadway play. He's acting like he's very, like.
I'm very Broadway. Yeah. All right. I'm very Broadway.
So Broadway. He knows when they're playing and where they're at. One Broadway play. And it's Harry Potter.
I was giving it to you. But I was giving
actually,
it to you.
Actually, no. I've seen three.
Larry, you don't have to lie to have friends. We're already friends.
It's true. However, where I saw the Beetlejuice was not in New York City. I didn't see it, but I saw it being advertised as a play. So I'm assuming it's a Broadway play.
Okay, so now we're just making stuff up.
Maybe it's a High School Musical.
All right.
Favorite, and we're back.
A favorite genre of music?
I like reggaeton.
Nice. Okay. That's the second one reggaeton got last month or so. Okay. Yeah. I like it.
All right. Favorite artist then, though?
Nicki Jam.
Okay.
Now, what do you think of Justin Bieber with Suavecito?
Suavecito or Despacito?
Yeah, Despacito. Yeah, Despacito.
Okay. Yeah. The truth comes out.
Yeah.
The white layer just came out there.
I'm not a fan. So.
It's okay.
Okay.
All right.
Reservation or just walk in?
Just walk in.
Yeah. Favorite type of food?
I like Greek.
I love Greek food. Tzatziki sauce or do you get Greek?
Oh, yes.
I know.
It's like double.
Yes.
I don't know anything about Greek food.
I'm not a fan of Greek food.
Oh, I love Greek food.
Like baklava? Oh.
All right. You don't
like baklava?
Boston, where should I go?
Well, Boston, you got to go pizza.
Pizza?
Pizza and grinders.
Grinders?
Subs.
Okay.
Sandwiches. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
You travel.
I don't know what grinders is.
It's just a sub.
What type of car do you drive?
I drive a free earned Mary Kay car.
Wow.
Boom. Awesome.
That's a big deal. That is awesome.
Is it a Cadillac then?
Not yet.
Oh, is there stages?
Oh, so there's tiers?
Yes. I drive a Chevy Equinox right now.
Is it still pink?
The Cadillac is pink, yes.
But the Equinox is not pink?
It's charcoal.
It's kind of random. Like, I would have thought they wanted them all pink.
No, the pink is pretty prestigious if you're driving a pink Cadillac.
Now, are they custom painted or do they come pink from Cadillac like that?
They actually shut down the factory to process the pink Cadillacs. So really? Yes.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
So if I bought like a pink Cadillac secondhand, like that's pretty...
You wouldn't be able to buy a pink Mary Kay secondhand.
So if you got the pink Cadillac and then didn't want it anymore, you can't sell it?
You could sell it, but you have to paint it before the...
Oh, there's like part of the... Oh, interesting.
Oh.
Right. So if you find one, it's probably somebody that didn't.
I'm really big into cars. I feel like everything's for sale in the car world. You could find it if you look hard enough. Maybe not.
Or just paint it. I don't know.
Beer, whiskey, or wine?
Wine.
Or vodka.
White or red? Just curiosity.
I do a little bit of both. I like sangria. So
okay.
I'm more on the sweet side.
Fair enough. All right, let's get into it. So you are a public speaker you did a TED Talk, right?
Yes.
And then you also do like at-risk youth. Is that basically what the Here's My Story? Is it Here's My Story?
Yep, Here My Story is for pretty much troubled children. So in the foster care system, have not so good homes. Or have just been exposed to a whole lot in a little time. And they either turn to drugs, alcohol, or just, gangs.
Okay.
So go ahead. Yeah, so if you don't mind, can we take you way back?
Yes.
All right. So you used to live in Boston.
Yes.
Right? So eventually you ended up in Vero Beach. But what got you, let's get back into Boston, right? So if we can talk a little bit about your childhood.
Okay.
Right. If you don't mind rehashing a little bit of what you talked through in the TED Talks.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I know you were through like your parents, right? Do you talk to them at all today?
I talk to my dad. I do not talk to my mom.
Okay. Okay. So you talk to your dad, but not your mom.
Okay.
So what was that like? Right. So you're a kid. How old were you? What's your earliest memory? The bad memories.
On the bad?
Yeah.
Probably like six-ish.
Six?
So why don't you just walk us through, because Larry's getting into a lot of the TED Talk and the people that are listening.
I was going to get into that, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, just walk us through your childhood a little bit.
Well, I grew up, there's one of four. I was six. So I was by myself till I was like six-ish. And then I grew up with a stepdad.
Yep. And he's the one that you talk to?
I do not talk to him.
Okay.
Yeah. So my dad left my mom when I was about 3 months.
Okay.
So he was kind of out of the picture. And stepdad came around. He was kind of just abusive. That was kind of the norm to my mom. And it wasn't until my brother was born that then he became abusive to me. I was kind of... black duckling, I should say. I was kind of the outsider. And soon after that, which I did mention in the TED Talk, is I kind of found out that my brother was actually my biological brother. But my mom was already married with my stepdad.
So did your stepdad know this?
I don't know if he knew per se, like, actual information, but... I broke the news to him when I found out, because he would treat me so bad. He would just tell me, well, just go back to your father. And one day I said, well, if I go, he goes. And
how old were you?
I was about 12, 13.
Okay.
And
so
how did you find out?
My mom told me.
Okay.
It was kind of like a hush secret.
So it was like 6 years of abuse. And then... at 12, you're like, well, if I go, he goes. Mm-hmm. And then at that point, he turned on him as well?
No, I wasn't really allowed to interact with my brother. It was kind of, I lived in the same house, but we weren't allowed to kind of hang out. It was
just more in passing or
in
at meals,
passing or in pictures. Or outside, you know, we would be, oh, this is our family of four. But at home it was.
Was that more on your mom or your stepdad that kind of?
I'd say it was both.
Gotcha.
Because my mom allowed it.
That's sure. true. That's sure. So, yeah, that makes sense.
I think, you know.
That's one thing I always say is like when people say like, oh, it's his wife's fault. I'm like, no, it's a couple. Like mm-hmm. I have a choice to like not do what my wife tells me to do. Right?
Maybe.
Not really.
You know what I mean?
I think when it comes to that, I mean, being a mom of three and my husband and I have been together for 17 years, if he was doing something wrong, I would say something and I would expect him to do the same.
Right.
Well, that's a partnership though.
Yeah.
Because there's a difference between, I feel like, a husband and wife and an actual partnership. There's a partnership, you work together and you work through things. And whenever it's just a husband and wife, a lot of times I feel like it's just sometimes one following the other, which is just as bad in my opinion. Like
yeah.
If you're following somebody that's doing something completely wrong and you're doing something completely wrong as well, it doesn't make you any better or worse.
It's the same, yeah, right? Yeah. You have a choice. Yeah. And that's what I meant. So you're 12 years old, right? So you tell him, if I go, he goes, what is his reaction?
And he was in shock. He was mad. He was.
Well, first off, why would he believe you right away?
Well, that's why when you asked me if he knew, I think he knew. I think it was all like a little bit of denial, kind of like, okay, now she knows.
So now now the secret is out, if you will. So now it's a different.
So it was a little bit more uncomfortable. And that's when the abuse got really bad. Like I used to catch backhands and I was like, okay, so why are you hitting me now? And it
he would hit you like out of the blue?
Out of the blue. Or if something was unfolded, or if the music was too loud. It was just kind of just random. So you kind of almost get used to it.
Okay.
Kind of sad to say that, but you.
But I mean, it becomes your norm. It's your everyday life. So yeah, that's.
Yeah, huh. Human beings are pretty.
Resilient
in the way that we can form to, you know, anything, you know, like if you live a certain way long enough, I feel like you just, like you said, it becomes the norm.
Yeah. So you're 12, you tell him that, does he kick you out at that point?
I start going to like my uncle's house, my aunt's house, grandma's, like the weekend, kind of longer and longer. And I would come home because my mom would always have kind of like a change of heart, kind of like, well, I'm the mom. So I would go home because as a child, you want to feel the love and belonging, you know, so you go back home and it would just start up again. And eventually I ended up in foster care.
And what age were you when you went to foster care?
About 14.
Now that's hard, right? Because at 14, it's hard to get, I guess, in foster care. And I'm very ignorant to a lot of things, but I'll openly admit that. So with foster care, I'm assuming that means that you're looking for a home to stay at and be adopted, right?
Yes and no. My circumstances, they had some hope that I would be back home. So adoption wasn't in my cards. Okay. It was just more of a home placement.
So they kind of knew the situation in the regards that it might be able to have the chance to go back. Do you feel like the older you get, that becomes the norm of they're trying to get them back at that point? Because if you're 14, 15, it might even be harder to be adopted at that point.
That's what I was going to get at, yeah.
So usually, with what happened to me with the 14, 15-year-olds, we were placed in homes, like...
group homes?
Group homes, yes.
Okay.
Yes. You basically age out.
From my experience, are always a lot of fun, the group homes.
Super fun.
Yeah.
Wear no shoelaces. They watch you when you go to the bathroom, and they...
And this was in Massachusetts?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. When you say age out, what do you mean, like you age out to become an adult?
Yes, at 18.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So you're in and out of there from 14 to 18?
Correct.
So are you still going to school at this point? Or?
I was going to school. I was really I was absent quite a bit. Yeah. They found a way to get me to school, so I did still attend school.
Okay. So did you end up graduating then, high school?
I barely graduated high school, but I did.
Okay.
But that's huge. I mean, especially with what you're going through, right? Because that's probably the last thing you want to think about.
It was.
Right?
Yeah.
So when you're in the foster care system, was it only group homes or did you go to anybody else's home?
I did both. I would do some homes were overnight and some homes were weeks, some were months.
And what was the stipulation? Like, why were some of them so short and some of them longer? Was that the people that were keeping them or was that you or what was the situation there?
It was the type of home. It was either they needed space for someone that needed more, I guess, I would be replaced. Like if there was, for instance, one of the homes that I was at, I had to leave because there was two babies that needed a home. So the babies were more important than me, which I totally understand. I mean, mm-hmm. That's okay. So it would depend on what the foster parents wanted as far as time with the child and if they needed the space for somebody else.
Okay. And is it still that way today, do you know? Or has it changed at all? Do you know?
With the children that I've worked with, it seems still the same because there's really a shortage of homes.
Okay.
So yeah. They really try to keep children with their parents. So they try to do, you know, mediation and hopefully in hopes that the children would go back. So the turnaround is a little off. So it does happen, unfortunately.
Okay. So there's still a lot of like shifting and moving around and stuff like, because my mom was in foster care for over half her childhood, but she was with one foster family. I think at least probably she's told me, I'm sure, but I want to say at least her whole high school career, she was with one foster family. But I didn't know whether that shifting like you're talking about was like a normal thing or if it was just in your circumstance.
I mean, if it doesn't shift, that's awesome. Like I have one foster mom and I've actually been trying to look for her because she was probably the longest I stayed with someone.
Uh-huh.
And she was awesome. And after I left, I haven't heard from her. I just want to say thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Now, did she give you hope for the future or like looking back, right?
You know, she actually was one person that she was just awesome. She had a child of her own and they were just fun. Like they lived life always happy. They're kind of like hippie. Mm-hmm. So they're always happy. And if somebody dropped something, it would be like, oh, that's okay. Whereas at home, I would drop something and it's like the world has come to an end. Like you just drop something.
So they were just more like accepting, loving type of.
Yes. Loving, caring, funny. Just.
Yeah.
What we love to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Right. That's how we want to raise our kids.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Something to strive for.
So you end up aging out. What do you do? What are you thinking there? You said you barely make it through high school. Next step.
So barely make it to high school and I meet this boy and we start dating and I aged out. So I don't really have a place to stay.
Where did you meet him? In the group home or?
No, outside. I met him through a family member, kind of like out and about, kind of hanging out. And we started dating. And probably 5 months into the relationship, it became abusive. First verbally, kind of mental, and physically, kind of shortly after. And I did that. I was in that relationship for about 5 years.
So it started 5 months in, but you stayed for 5 years. Okay.
I stayed for, a long time.
But again, that was something that was kind of normal to you based on how you grew up, right?
What happened is you believe that's what's how your life's gonna be. Like that's your worth. You grew up with it. So maybe now it started becoming, well, maybe this is how I am supposed to be normal. Treated.
Yeah. Yeah. So 5 years is a long time. So did you feel like you loved that boy at that time?
You know, I look back and it was almost like I was confused. I was always trying to figure out, okay, he may love me. Like, if not, then he wouldn't be around. And at times I would second guess myself on, well, maybe I did something that got him upset. So I was always trying to rationalize why I would get treated the way I did.
And I think that's a pretty common thing, though, in abusive relationships for the person being abused. I think, you know, they rationalize it, you know, and try and normalize it. Now, you're with them for 5 years. Did something happen, or did you just have an aha moment, or what changed?
Well, we became like Tyson and Holyfield. So I got to the point that I would just fight back.
Uh-huh.
And one day, you know, I said, you know what? This is it. I'm done. And he simply said, no, you're not going anywhere. And I said, okay, I'm really done. And he decided to try to take his own life. And I remember that night standing over him in the hospital bed. He was getting pumped with charcoal. And I just thought to myself, like, this is not going to end this way. Like, I have to find a way out. And that's when I kind of realized the power of just really wanting a way out. And that was the end of our relationship. He did survive, but that was the end of me and him.
Okay. Like, what was it? A clean, like, nothing to do with him ever again? Like, did you ever talk to him again? Did you ever run into him?
I did run into him, and it was a couple confrontations, but the day I didn't run into him, I was on my way to the military.
Okay.
So that was my way out.
You did run into him when you were on your way to the military?
That was the one. Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Now,
how did that go?
It was interesting. He didn't believe that I was leaving. And I said, you know, you did tell me that I wasn't going to become anyone. And I was like, so this is my chance. I want to get away. And the only way to get away is to really leave. So then I joined the service.
And you're right. But I mean, honestly, it's a really level-headed decision, I think.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
Because I've run into a lot of kids that, you know, there's no way out, or they feel like there's no way out. And like you said, there's that moment where you're like, I have to change this. I have to do something drastic. It can't be something that I just let fester, or, you know, I stick around, or I stay in the same apartment, or I stay staying with the same people, or hanging out with the same people, doing the same job. Sometimes I think we as human beings, we need that drastic change or something to kick
the aha moment. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's so easy. If you would have stayed, it could have been 2 weeks later, and eventually, like, and then you meet up, and then you have a moment, and you just don't know. Like, it could easily be dragged right back into it.
So, are you 22, 23 at this time?
21.
Okay.
21 when you joined the service?
I joined in OTU.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, we're not trying to age you.
No. I was just trying to figure out, right? Because so
you were dating him while you were in foster care then?
A little bit.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to figure out. Like, yes. Okay.
Yes. Gotcha.
So you joined the Army. How's this?
Crazy.
How's boot camp, first off? Oh, right? Because like, now it's like a big wake-up call, right?
Big wake-up call.
Yeah, because you just went through all this crap. Oh. But now it's like a different scenario.
So I'll tell you one of my funny stories. So, huge wake-up call. So when you first start, they wake you up really, really early. And nobody knows each other. So you're like by yourself. So we all wake up call, and I don't wake up.
Uh-oh.
Okay. So they're throwing pans on the hallway and yelling, and I don't hear anything. So everyone is downstairs the first day of formation, and Ingrid is on her bed. They flip the bed over and wake me up. I was never late again.
That's a good lesson.
Did you have to, if somebody wake you up, like shake you? Because if the pans don't wake you, and somebody just actually shakes you, did you have to like make a deal with someone next to you?
Yes. And this, you know, we started teaming up and saying, okay, yeah, like you're battle buddies.
Gotcha.
We kind of buddied up and it was good.
So this is early on.
That was my first day.
First day. First day one.
That's awesome. Okay.
So were you the perfect American soldier or did you love it, hate it?
You know, honestly, it was my way of a clean slate. It was my chance to, nobody knew me. Nobody had heard of me. And it was my chance to just say, you know what? This is, build me. Whoever I become now is who I'm going to build on.
Yeah, you get to be your present and not be your past.
Now, yes. Did you feel that you needed that going into the military? Is that what drove you to go into the military? Was more of, I don't know anyone, I can start over, I can do something with my life, etc.
Yes, I was hungry. I was really hungry just to do something. To just, one thing I can tell you is I was always aware that I did not want to make people feel how I was feeling. So I didn't know what it was. So I didn't know what it was to feel loved. I just knew what not to do.
Okay.
I don't know if that makes sense.
Did the military give you a sense of belonging?
Yes.
Because you didn't have that growing up? Like, did you really feel like you were a part of something at that point?
Yes.
When you joined the Army? Well, because, I mean, it's your brothers and sisters, yeah, really, right? Like you said, your battle buddy, you know, like you got to make sure you're not letting them down and they're not going to let you down.
You have to trust someone with, yeah, your life.
How many, and at this point, you couldn't do it, right? You had no trust in people, or were you always like still trusting of other people before this?
Before this, no. I wouldn't trust anybody. And even then in the service, it took me a while to understand the concept of, even if I had a battle buddy, I always had plan B in my head.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was always kind of always scheming, prepared. Yes.
Yeah. So how long did you do? Or how many years did you serve?
I was in, I think I clocked out at like 11 years.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Why'd you get out 11 years? You're halfway to retirement, right?
I had my baby, my last baby, uh-huh, and I was due to go overseas again.
Okay.
And I had to make a decision if I was going to go overseas again or be at home.
I gotcha. That's understandable. Well, we definitely appreciate your service.
Yeah, for sure.
Awesome. 11 years.
So too. 11 years, what did you do in the Army?
Well, my MOS, which was my job, was an admin, administrative assistant.
Okay.
And boots on ground, when I was in Iraq, I used to be a part of a civil affairs section.
Okay.
So that basically did humanitarian aid to local villages, and we would do missions, so convoys, pretty much every day.
And you'd go do just humanitarian aid at different villages and, yes, stuff in Iraq?
Mm-hmm. What was the, if you don't mind my asking, what was like the worst thing that you saw?
The worst thing that I
saw? And I don't mean like death, so I just mean like humanitarian aid, right? Like as far as like those pieces.
Well, I think the way they live, it was really interesting. We would go in and fix a school and put wire and lights and all that stuff. And they would go in later and dig up the wire and sell the wire.
Like in no time, probably.
In no time.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of like, wow. And we would get connectors from Walmart and people from over here to donate over there to for us to drop off. So that was cool, but they didn't really like us.
Yeah.
So okay. You said like you'd go in and you'd, you know, put infrastructure in and they would just dig it up. Somebody would basically thieve it,
mm-hmm,
to take it away from the school. I mean, I hate to say it, but that's not too far off from some ghettos here in America either. You know what,
yeah,
I mean? Like it's that same mentality. I feel like, you know, it's halfway around the world, you know, or almost 180, whatever, but it's that same mentality. Like, you know, you can go in and try to make something better, but until the community wants to change, there's not going to be real change. I mean, we could want, you know, inner city Detroit to change. You know, we could go in there every day for the rest of our lives, but until that community wants to change, it's not really going to change. I don't feel that way anyways.
No, you're right. I mean, that's how they live. It's like when we used to drop off jackets. They rather burn the jackets for, you know, get warm instead of wearing them.
Really?
Yeah. Like, it was bizarre.
Like, did it say America on the jackets?
No.
That's what I was wondering. Is it because it was given to by Americans? No.
So it's just because of who gave it to them?
No, it was just that's how they think. It's almost like they think of just today.
It's very short term.
You know, so like, it is what it is. And it was just weird. And the way they treat women too.
Yeah.
Women, I mean, you have one man to like three women.
Right.
Yeah. Again, their culture completely different. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a whole different world. Right. Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
So after 11 years, you get out. And did you have something in mind that you were going to do? Or were you like, I don't know what I'm going to do?
I did not. Coming home from overseas was a whirlwind. You're a whole different person. So
I'm sure. In the sense that like it gives you anxiety or in the sense that you're just, it just is eye opening. Like, wow, like I can't believe people live like that versus here. I live in a house and you know, I'm pretty comfortable. Right.
Well, both. You appreciate a lot when you're back home. So I'm not one to complain too much because the water bottle you gave me was probably what I used to take a shower with overseas.
Okay.
So there's a lot of things that you kind of just.
Yeah, I had a guy who I worked with and he was from India and he was here in Vero Beach for like a year, maybe 2 years. And he went from India, went to the UK, came to America, and he was working for a company based out of Boston. But he was stationed here for a year working with me. And one of the things that he said to me is like, America's the greatest place in the world. And I was like, why is that? He said, because there's roads. I was like, what do you mean there's roads? He's like, yeah, there's roads. Like one thing that even to the rural areas, there's roads. He's like, there's almost every country in the world, they don't have roads everywhere. Like it's just, and it's something that's simple and it sounds stupid, right? But it's just something that's simple. And I could totally understand that.
Cause yeah, like, it's the perspective that we have compared to somewhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you've had this conversation before, you know, we've hosted kids from Africa.
Yeah.
And that's the first thing they said when they get, you know, off the plane is, I can't believe how nice your roads are and how clean it is. Cause everything's dusty there in Africa. So they're like, That was literally the first thing they said to me was, your roads are so nice. And, you know, it's something that, you know, we don't even, you know.
It takes so much advantage.
Yeah, okay. Meanwhile, granted. I'm like, I have to go down a dirt road.
Yeah.
You know? This is pretty terrible.
So right? You don't know what you're doing when you get out. You don't have a plan yet. So.
Now, to get back, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. You're married with three kids at this point already?
No.
No. Oh, I thought you, okay.
The babies did not come in after quite a couple debates.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was going to say, we skipped something.
I thought we did. My bad. I thought I had heard that part. I'm sorry.
So we, growing up the way I did, I was terrified of having children. And my tall, dark, and handsome husband, I kind of said, yeah, you know, we can have children later. Later.
Tomorrow. Yeah. There's always tomorrow.
Yes. So... we debated quite a bit, and I finally said, okay, let's just see what happens.
What was the fear? I know you had a bad childhood, but what exactly, if you can pinpoint it, what was the fear that you had?
Just not knowing what to do with them, you know, how to care for them. Just, I mean, that was a human being. I wasn't sure I was ready to know what to do. Like, it was like up in the air. I was like, okay, I'm going to bring this child into this world. Am I going to do the same thing?
That's what I was going to ask, actually. So was the fear that you would fall in the same practice as your stepfather and your mom? Mm-hmm. Okay. Even though you don't have that in you, like you were afraid that that could become me.
Yes.
Okay. That's interesting. Yeah, I would have never thought about that.
Do you ever find yourself, this is something I've always thought of, like, when you're parenting in that moment that you like freeze thinking that, wait, I'm about to do something towards the way that I was raised and then like stop yourself. Have you caught yourself there before? Not abusive or anything like that, but like I've noticed that before, like, wait, I don't do that. That's my, you know, I might want to do it differently than my parents or
saying that maybe your parents said that you're like, oh shit, Why did I say that?
Yes. Okay. That's I sometimes have to, or I make myself count to 5 or 10 before I answer. It's almost like a mommy timeout. I'm like, just give me a second. Let me just compose myself, because I don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting how your brain works.
Well, for 16 years, you dealt with something. You can't just shake it. You know, it's unfortunately a part of what you grew up with. So I think it's okay, right? As long as you know to not do.
Yes, as long as you're aware, I think. Mm-hmm. You
know, yeah, we can exactly.
I think that's the biggest thing, being aware.
Yeah, being aware and working on yourself, right? Like, yes. I don't care how perfect you are. You're always working on yourself.
So you decide to have kids, but you're still in the military at this point?
Yes.
Okay. So you end up having 3 before you get out of the military, or you just have the first one?
Yes. So the last 3 years of me being in the service, they were all kind of born.
Okay.
Right after another.
Oh, they are pretty close in age. Huh?
Yeah. That's pretty awesome.
So, mine's close in age too. Just the one and done.
Mine is too. He's 12 now.
Very close in age. All siblings, Yeah. So you get out, you got 3 kids. Is your husband, was he in the military or no?
No, funny joke. He's an easy target. He's about 6'5", 340.
Okay, so he's a big boy.
So I always make fun of him. I'm like, the minute he goes up, I'm like, he's down. No. He stayed away from the service.
Okay. So you get out, and is he working at that point? Or
yes, he does IT. So he he's always worked.
I'll geek out with him whenever he wants.
Yeah.
Let him know. He might enjoy that.
Yeah, let's do it.
Sounds awful.
Mr. Hernandez.
Hey. Sounds awful until I need my computer fixed.
Exactly.
That's a fair statement. Yeah, for sure.
So you get out, and what's the first thing you do after you get out of the service then, like job-wise?
It's actually really hard. It's difficult to get a job after the service.
Well, what year did you get out? 11 years. So you got out 2013?
I got out in 2013. So after the service...
Is this when you're thinking about becoming a mortician?
The mortician was right a little bit after high school. So it was either mortician or military.
Oh, okay.
I'm glad you chose military.
Yes.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, mortician, I just thought, because I didn't have to talk to people.
Yeah.
That's understandable.
Yeah. And if we can get into that just first for our audience, why did you want to become a mortician? Possibly.
Because they wouldn't talk back to me. They might move, but I didn't have to conversate with anyone.
Yeah.
And that to me was almost soothing, that I can just do a job and not have to talk to anybody.
Wait, you said they might move?
They might move.
She know. Might move them.
No. Is it rigor mortis?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
That would freak me out if I was sitting there. I'm sure you go through training and it'd be fine, but I'm thinking myself.
You know, when the rigor mortis starts to relax, you get a little movement.
So that's about it. Other than that.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought of that either, Jeremy. So I would have been like,
I was like, wait, what? But okay.
So then after, I decided to go to school.
Okay.
So I went to school to become a radiation therapist. And I loved it. I loved patients. And it was interesting because when I graduated.
It's a pretty good job though, right?
It is.
Yeah.
It's a good job. It's very sad.
GI Bill paid it.
Some of it.
Okay.
Some of it. And I graduated salutatorian. Mm-hmm. And
very nice.
I didn't know what that was when I got
awarded. I don't know what that is.
Okay. It's right below valedictorian.
We're going to have to look at the school guy here.
Right?
Come back. He doesn't know either.
Okay. He's I think so you're. I think you're right, but I don't want to give the wrong answer. So let me look it up.
Okay.
So I think I looked it up when I got awarded that. And I that's was like, awesome. Oh, wow, that's. Well, you know, I was paying for school and. Again, you know, I wanted to do well. So I graduated. And
so this is very different than your high school, right? Because, yes. I mean, high school, you're like, whatever. And then you became your own person. And then now you're like, how I need to do the best I can.
Yes.
And crush it. So if I could just take a step back, right? The way I'm looking at it is
number two.
You went from yes, right below valedictorian. Yes. Fantastic.
Not number one, number two.
That's good.
I can relate.
Jeremy can relate to that.
Not in academics.
No, in everything else. Yeah. All right. So, So you came from an abusive childhood, not caring. Then you went into the service, and I'm assuming that brought a lot of meaning to your life. It's like night and day, and now you're out of the service. To me, it's almost like it would be almost anxiety. Like to me, like just thinking it through, like, you know, because again, I went from a bad childhood to something that means something to, you know, because you're bringing humanitarian aid to people in bad situations, and then you're getting out, and then you're doing radiation therapy. Is that the reasoning behind wanting to do the radiation therapy? Is because are you thinking?
Humanitarian.
Yeah, humanitarian. Connection. I'm helping somebody. I'm still doing something for someone. I'm just trying to understand. Mm-hmm.
So I do have a desire to help people. I'm really good at that. It makes me happy. So anxiety is probably it's like a daily vitamin for me. I'm always working on that. Growing up the way I did, joining the service because of an abusive relationship, you know, not wanting children, having children, going to school, doing really well. I kind of put everything, I suppressed everything. So anything that happened just kind of suppressed, and it kind of just kind of piled up. So yeah. You are correct.
Yeah, because that's how my mind would work. Yeah.
What, suppress as well?
What I want to
say. Like you mean? Like
suppress? Yeah. That's how I, yeah. Because I enjoy like helping people. Like that's,
yes,
not what I do for a living, but yeah.
You said anxiety is like a daily vitamin. In a good way or a bad way?
Both.
Okay, so it drives you? Is that what...
It sometimes drives me, and it's sometimes something I have to kind of work through. Uh-huh. You know, owning my business and being a mom and just a service alone.
Well, because, I find that almost fascinating because I feel like everybody that I've ever talked to about anxiety is crippling.
Yeah, but
I can see how it could be a driving force too. Well,
but that kind of goes with like good stress and bad stress.
Yeah, but for me though, anxiety I feel is what has kept humans alive, right? Because like if I have anxiety, whether it's an animal coming at me to come eat me, I either have to have fight or flight, right?
Yeah, and
so to me, like if you suppress your anxiety, don't get me wrong, some of it is crippling. Like I totally understand. I'm not saying anything wrong to folks who may take a pill to suppress it, you know, it's perfectly okay. But I'm not a clinician, but my thought process is you should definitely listen to your anxiety and see how you can work around it.
Yeah, but that becomes time, I think, in practice, like self-regulating, what you're saying daily, you had to kind of deal with that and work through it, which I think becomes certain levels become easier to deal with. Do you feel like you've addressed some of the stuff that you've suppressed, or are you still trying to kind of keep that to the side, or do you kind of work through that?
You guys ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I suppressed it for a really long time, and I don't suggest that to anyone because it's really, it weighs a lot. Mm-hmm. So now dealing with it and just kind of going through, you didn't have control over what happened to you. Like I can't look back or go back to where I grew up and change anything. Whatever happened was, it is what it is. It was going to happen anyways. So dealing with it now has been a little more difficult, but definitely you've got to do it. I wouldn't suggest waiting so long.
It's probably a weight off your shoulders. You probably feel like you're just a better person, wife, yes, mother, everything.
So when you say dealing with it now, you mean the anxiety?
Just the...
Yes, the anxiety or just regular... daily stuff. I mean things like driving. I couldn't drive before coming home from overseas. because overseas they used to put IEDs and mines in potholes. So I could not drive when I got home.
This is why America is better, because we have roads.
Yes. Although we have potholes, which drove me crazy.
So you're a radiation therapist, correct? Yes. And are you still doing that?
I am not.
Okay, so what got you out of radiation therapy?
I wanted to be a mom. I was working really early hours and probably working 12-hour days, 14-hour days. And the babies were born so close that by working so many hours, I felt like I was missing out on what I brought these babies in the world to do. That's so
understandable.
In the midst of that is where I started my business with Mary Kay.
And how long you've been doing Mary Kay then?
8 years.
Okay. And has it, and obviously you got a car through them, so you're doing all right with Mary Kay?
I am.
Yeah. I assume they don't buy cars for like just signing up, right?
No, they
otherwise
don't.
Otherwise, I'll be signing up. Because I was going to do that today. Yeah.
No, you got to work.
Okay.
All right.
Fair enough. Definitely.
So we like to end every episode asking one question. And based on your experiences, what is one of the most important pieces of advice you can give to our listeners?
Okay. It is to focus and live out your true self. No matter what happens, no matter what you go through, no matter what people say, always just sit back and take a second to see, is that what I really want to do in life? Is that who I really want to be and become? Or is that what I want people to remember me as?
Now, yeah, that's fantastic.
That's good advice.
I do have one more a couple questions, though. How did you get into the TED Talk here in Vero, right? Because if people want to find you, they can find you on YouTube.
Yes.
That's how, yeah.
Not just a TED Talk.
Not just
TED
Talk. She's
got Mary Kay videos.
Mary Kay videos.
All right.
So if you want to learn how to
And we're about to go live, and I'm going to get a makeover.
I may be able to help you.
I don't think
so. Yeah,
no, be great content, but it would be great, great content.
You're the
no. She said you need it more. I'm just saying that's the way.
It's true.
What I got from
this is true. I'm with you on this, Jeremy. All right. So, how'd you get into to speaking at a TED Talk?
It was they chose me as a speaker, and it started with Hear My Story.
Yeah, and I want to talk about that really quickly as well before we wrap up.
So somebody heard they wanted people with interesting stories, and Hear My Story was the first time I shared a little bit about me. My TED Talk was the first time I ever told my whole story, kind of fast forward. So it was new to me. One of my friends was a part of the committee, and she thought it would be a good idea.
Yeah.
How nervous were you? Because was that your first major public speaking at that point?
I wasn't that nervous. What happened after they closed the doors, after I was done, my legs kind of gave on me.
Oh,
I was super nervous. I think it was a lot of information to let people know. And I work really hard to always be happy. I don't like to leave your space. And for you to say, oh my gosh, she's so draining. So I make it a point to be a good vibe kind of gal.
Yeah, no, we definitely get that.
So letting people know my story was.
Yeah, you're very vulnerable at that moment.
Yeah, and you don't want to be the downer in the room.
Yes.
I get that.
But that's powerful, though.
But I feel it's more, empowering or uplifting.
Yeah, but if you want to be the good vibe person, like you, I get that
100%. You got to be bubbly.
Like, no, yeah.
Yeah.
People love the good vibe. They love the life of the party. You know, I understand that. And you don't ever want to be the downer. And to be vulnerable like that, it definitely takes something.
Yeah.
So Hear My Story, that's where they work with at-risk youth, correct?
Yes.
Or you guys work with that. Okay, where can they find Hear My Story if they want you guys to come speak or do something like that? You guys got a website or something like that?
Right now, it's in the works.
Okay.
But I believe if you type in Hear My Story, Eric Seymour
Okay.
He works for the district.
Yes, he's the truancy officer for the school district.
He's the point of contact.
Okay.
Right now.
All right. And so they can get a hold of Eric Seymour and he can get them set up with you guys. Okay. Now, Mary Kay, where do they get hold of you if they need to buy some Mary Kay?
They can go on my website. On Instagram is probably the
What's your Instagram?
Is Ask MK Ingrid.
Okay. A-S-K M-K I-N-G-R-I-D.
Yes.
And if Corey could spell that.
Yes,
that's ladies and gentlemen. Thing. And I didn't even write it down as I was spelling it.
that was pretty good.
That was pretty amazing.
Still trying to get my words together. I was so speechless. Right now.
I agree.
So Facebook, Twitter, what's your YouTube handle?
Yes, come on. Give us the YouTube. What's the YouTube? I've looked them up and I've watched them, but I don't.
So same thing as YouTube.com / Ask MK Ingrid. I try to keep it all together. And I did it Ask MK Ingrid because I do hear my story and I've done TED Talk. So I kind of, people ask me all the time, you know.
Why?
Why and how.
Tell them to mind their business.
And I'm pretty down to earth. I mean, I love having a great time. I love making people smile and do jokes. So it's
awesome. All right, guys. Make sure you check her out. Appreciate Ask it. MK Ingrid on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. That's where you can find her. And if you're looking for Hear My Story, you can just Google that and you'll be set up with the truancy officer in Indian River County.
Who's taller? Who's taller? Your husband or Eric Seymour?
Eric Seymour.
He's so tall. He might be 7 foot. I don't know how tall. He's amazingly tall.
You're like way taller?
Yes.
Way
taller. He's
than your husband?
He's gonna duck in a door. He ducks in a door. I've met him several. Yeah, I've talked to him several times.
Can we just have him on just to talk about his height?
Yeah, I'm
sure. No, but we could connect it to Hear My Story. Sure.
He'd love that. Tall people love when you know ask them.
What's the weather up there? All right, sorry. Anyway.
We're going to do a, go ahead. Sorry. Corey's about to do something, and it's Jeremy, and I totally messed him up.
I feel like Jeremy's been drinking.
Yes. No, I have not.
Hey, guys, we appreciate you listening. If you guys got any questions, comments, concerns, or you want to be a guest on the show, email us at fullgorillalife@gmail.com.
And if you want to see what's going on with us, you can find us on Instagram at Facebook at fullgorillalife and on Twitter at gorillafull.
And last but not least, please feel free to check us out at fullgorilla.life. And please subscribe to our podcast app of choice.
That's what
it's
we're doing.
It's been a while.
It's been a while here.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Ingrid, we're going to have to do this again.
Definitely. We appreciate it, Ingrid.
Thanks for coming on.
Later.
Thank you.